Today we have the opportunity to have another one of our elected officials here with us, and I'd like to welcome Darlene Drake, our circuit clerk, with us. And kind of in line with what we were saying, we want to try to educate all of our citizens, kind of the responsibilities of each office, and I think it's a good opportunity to bring Darlene in, let her go over what all her office is tasked with. And so, Darlene, if you'd like to introduce yourself and tell anything personally about yourself, how many years you've been serving and that kind of thing, then we'll get into what exactly your office does.
Okay, well, it's good to be here with you today. My name's Darlene Drake, and I've been circuit clerk since June of 2006. My term actually started in January of 2007, but the former clerk retired early and at the last of May, so I went in about 6 months early. We do district court, which most people are familiar with. That's misdemeanors, traffic, and felonies. Now, what that is, if you get a ticket for no seat belt, a speeding ticket, or AI, DUI, that kind of thing. The more serious crimes are felonies, and that's something that has to be taken before the grand jury and goes on up to circuit court. In circuit court, you have land cases, cases where of unpaid bills that are over $5,000, disputes of some kind that require a higher money amount, or if someone's been mistreated, nursing home abuse cases. We just had a trial on a nursing home abuse case. Those kinds of cases is what circuit court is. Now, family court started in Powell County, I believe, in 2008. I'm not real sure. It was after I came into office. And that is for juvenile court, some juvenile court, for dependent neglect and abuse cases, adoptions, divorces, anything to do with the family goes to family court. We've got three judges, the district court judge is Kenny Prophet, the circuit court judge is Frank Fletcher, and the family court judge is Larry Miller. Our office provides staff for the court, and now we have court about every day. Before, we had it about twice a week. We have the best thing, I guess, in our office is for a 16-year-old is driver's license. And adoptions, when somebody gets to adopt a child. About everything else in our office is usually not a good thing. People don't enjoy coming to our office. We handle domestic violence. Most of the things that go on in our office are pretty volatile. I have eight ladies, one gentleman that works for me.
I guess, Darlene, in talking about you, like you said, y'all provide a service for all three or facilitate those three courts. Just for the people that's not familiar, what's some examples? I mean, I know a little bit. Y'all, there's a lot of work that goes into getting the case ready. I mean, so kind of what y'all actually do
okay.
to prepare for these things going to court or
well,
some of that kind of
you
thing.
Have to, when someone gets a citation, AOC is trying really hard to streamline everything, or the Court of Justice is trying to streamline everything to be online. We have e-citations now. We have e-filings. You can pay your citation over the line, over the internet. Everything's trying to go paperless. Of course, I say all the time, we'll always have paper, but we file the citations, we open the case, we get reports from pretrial services, we get reports from the CDW. A lot of people are familiar with the court designated worker. She handles all juvenile cases. They have to go through her first. Dependent neglect and abused cases have to go through social services first. And they eventually all end up in our office. Every case starts with a complaint, a petition, a citation. There has to be a start to a case. Once that's filed, you have to have a court date. A lot of people now are filing their cases themselves. They want to file it themselves. And that's hard to do, you know, because you are held to the same standard as an attorney. And in my office, they want us to tell them how to do that, and I'm not allowed to do that. It's against law for me to tell you how to file a case. I cannot practice law. They call that practicing law without a license, and I can go to jail for that. People don't understand that, you know, because they want you to be able to help them, and we want to help them, but that's something that we just cannot do. So that all comes down to you give the officer will give the person a court date. If you file a lawsuit, your attorney will get you a court date. If social services files a case, once we get it, we issue summonses that give you a court date. If you go to jail, the jail bonds you out and your court date's on the bond. Okay? There's so many different ways you can get a court date. Sometimes the jail, the officer, will give you the wrong court date, and we have to mail you out a new court date. Sometimes, which is a real problem for our office, a lot of people don't have the correct mailing address on their information. Those notices come back, you know. Causes a real problem for the court system and for the defendant or the person that's in court. You know, it's hard for them, too. They don't understand that, you know, that you have to get them a notice. They don't understand that it's their responsibility to contact us if their address is not correct. So it's just a really tedious process that a lot of people just don't understand how important it is that the court, for one thing, have your correct address. For another thing, that if you have something pending in court, you need to keep in touch with the circuit clerk's office to find out what's going on.
Yeah, and I guess as you're, like you mentioned, your staff, I guess, is the largest in the courthouse, kind of speaks to the complexities of your office and how much yes. you're tasked with. I guess kind of you hit on the court system. Another thing I don't think you touched on, I guess y'all have a big role in when they do orientations for jury and that kind of thing. You have a part in the office, has a part in that process as well.
Once years ago, there was a process where you put jurors at, I don't know how they got the names. I think they cut them out of a phone book back then. And they put them in a wheel. And they spun this wheel and they'd pull out people's names. And that's who was on the jury. Well, they decided that was not constitutional. So now we have a jury management program. I send an email to that program for how many jurors I want, how many the judge thinks he'll need. So we, as of right now, we do that once a year. I usually do it in June. They're usually sworn in sometime in July, 1st of August. We send out for 350 for circuit court, 175 for district court, and 100 for the grand jury, because you have three different panels. Out of that 350 people, some of those people will have moved out of the county. Some of them will be deceased. Some of them will be convicted felons. And some of them will have some type of sickness that they cannot serve. We're lucky out of 350 people if we can get 80 to 90 people to serve. Then you go to district court where we send out 175. Normally we'll get about 40. Then we send out 100 for the grand jury. And we'll end up with about 25 out of those. Now, the grand jury are the folks who decide on cases, on criminal cases, that will go to circuit court. In other words, they decide whether there's enough evidence presented to see if someone will be indicted in criminal court. District court, most of the cases that they hear are disability cases. And I haven't talked about that. Disability cases are cases where someone has gotten older and may have Alzheimer's, they may have dementia, or they may have had a stroke, unable to communicate. It's mostly parents or grandparents. It may be a disabled child. Anybody 16 years or older. has to be determined to be disabled. And a lot of people don't know it, but even if you have a child and they're over the age of 16, you have to be appointed their guardian. And in order to do that, you have to file a lawsuit, and it has to go through the process and have a jury trial for someone, and they have to determine that this person is indeed disabled. And there has to be a judgment from the court, and you have to be appointed their guardian. Most of the district court jury, that's what they do. The other cases they do would be anything that someone could go to jail for less than a year. Okay? Circuit court, the stakes are higher. You know, that could be anything from murder to what I talked about before, a nursing home abuse case, land cases where land has, you know, people have land disputes. It could be anything like that, anything where the value is over $5,000.
I guess one thing, there's several things, I guess, beyond the amount of things you all handle, but that makes your office a little bit unique. I guess one of the things, naturally, your elected term is 6 years, where most of the other offices are 4 years. Any reasoning for that? And
the reason I have been told, my understanding of that is, a district judge's term is 4 years. Circuit court and family court judges are 8 years. It's always been my understanding that the circuit clerk was 6 years because they fell in between those two, so that a judge was never, I guess, in the position where he was, I guess, stuck with a new clerk and a new judge and I'm assuming that was because the only time that happens is a district judge ever so many years, like this upcoming election, for instance. I can't speak for Judge Profit, but I will be retiring. So there will be a new circuit clerk, and if Judge Profit retires, there will be a new district judge. You see what I'm saying?
I do, and I would imagine, too, the process and the length of time it takes some of these cases to have some continuity in between, too. Like I said, the circuit clerk may have the paperwork in between, so it kind of helps, I guess, with the continuity of the court system would be some of the reason. Another thing I think unique that maybe a lot of people aren't aware, unlike a lot of other offices, your office actually, to run for that office, you have to pass a certain test.
And, yes.
So that makes it a little different. If you want to talk a little bit about that.
And okay. There's what it entails. Yes. There is a test that is given. When I took it, it was in January. I think the last time it was given, it was in December. They haven't posted it yet, so I'm not sure when they're going to give it, but it will either be this December or January.
Typically prior to filing dates, I guess, kind of in line
with
that.
It's prior to the deadline. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is once they grade it, they send the scores to the county clerk because those are the only people that can file. The test covers the clerk's manual, the counting manual, and the personnel manual. It also covers English, spelling, math, and reading comprehension. It is by far not an easy test. I mean, it's something you have to study for. I had worked in the circuit clerk's office for 13 years. I had been gone for 5 years when I took the test. I had taken the test 3 times. The first time I took it, I passed it. I'd been there like 2 years. The second time I took it, I did not pass it. The third time I took it, when I ran, I studied for 3 months, and I passed it. So when I say that it's not something to take lightly, I truly believe it's something that if you're interested in and you really want, you know, you got to be dedicated to take the test and pass it. I encourage anybody that if they want that position, you know, to study hard and go take the test.
Darlene, unfortunately, it looks like we're running out of time today for this segment, so we'll pick up on this thought and finish it out and continue on with Functions Your Office tomorrow. If you'll join us again tomorrow, you can hear the rest of this conversation.
Thank you.